Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
Oh, hello. Welcome to the show. This is Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. And I'm going to talk a little bit tonight. I'm going to talk about whatever... I'm going to talk in whatever direction I am led. And I'm going to speak mostly about my own experience because that's what I've got. Let me tell you just a little story about experience. I may have told this story. I know just about every decent story I have, I've probably told on the air before. But nobody listens to the show more than once anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I attended a ceremony for a monk, for feeding a monk. And this was at a sangha, specifically an Indonesian Buddhist sangha. And I was fascinated by Indonesian Buddhism because Buddhism was at that time illegal in Indonesia. Like any religion that didn't have God at the center of it was illegal. So you gotta have some heavy respect for people who continue to follow their spirituality even if they can be arrested for it. Of course, over here they couldn't be arrested for it, and it's mostly this sangha catered to students and traveling faculty from Indonesia who happened to be working at the university. There's a gentleman, a very successful gentleman, obviously from Indonesia, who he was fish. He sold fish. He was a seafood salesman to restaurants and other places that sold fish. And he was very successful, and he basically bankrolled this sangha out of his own pocket. So he was able to do things that maybe just a group of, a few college students wouldn't be able to do. For example, he brought in a monk. And small Buddhist sanghas usually don't have their own monk because you have to support him. The monk isn't allowed to handle money or work outside of his practice in any way. So if the monk is going to be permanently attached, which you're not supposed to be attached to anything if you're Buddhist, but if you're going to work in a specific sangha all the time, then the people within that sangha would have to support that monk. Boy, I promised this was going to be a short story, didn't I? And it's just gotten longer and longer. I haven't even gotten to that point yet. Okay, so there's a monk of the sangha. And we were invited, a friend of mine were invited to participate in the ceremony where they feed the monk, again, because the people there have to feed him, have to take care of him because he doesn't have any means of his own. And then his job then is to fulfill their spiritual needs, which in Buddhism is basically talking, because they don't have any, I won't say that, there are ceremonies, but there are lots of ceremonies in Buddhism. That's not the same, I don't think it's the same sort of ceremony as in Christianity. Okay, now stop getting sidetracked and tell the story. We did the feeding ceremony. It was a lot of fun. He ate, we ate. It's what happens is you give him, people will all bring whatever food they're going to bring, and the monk picks what he wants, and then everybody else eats up what's left. So it's kind of like a big picnic, kind of a big party. And then after everybody's done eating, you can ask the monk questions. So I asked... Let's see if I can remember exactly how I phrased this. My concern was that I had come through so much crap in my life that I really didn't have anything to build a spiritual life on. That no matter where I went spiritually, no matter what sort of goodness or serenity that I would be able to obtain, that the things that I had done before were always going to drag me down. And so I felt like I could never have a good meditation practice or spiritual practice of any kind because of all the crap that I did. So the first thing the monk said to me, and this is a serious monk. He was an actual, you know, with the orange robes, the shaved head, and he studied in Tibet. And he was a serious person. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, first of all, lucky you." And I was like, "Well, lucky me." He said, "Lucky you for having so much experience to draw from in your meditation and in your practice." This is because these young people, and he's indicating the students who are there also participating in the ceremony, so these young people, you know, they have to work really hard to find something to meditate about because they have so little experience with life. He says, "You've got all this wonder." He says, "You will have an amazing meditation practice because you've got all this stuff to bring into it." He says, "Geez, I never really thought about it that way." And then he told a beautiful story, and I hesitate to tell this story because I'm using it as part of a story I'm writing. One of the characters in my story tells it much the same way as this monk tells it. I'm switching it up a little bit. But, hey, you guys probably, when you buy the book, you'll recognize it. He said that it was, he just talked about a monastery, and there's one of the monks, and his job was to ring the bell every morning to call the other monks to breakfast. And he's supposed to ring the bell seven times, and then there were seven times the monks would know it was time to come for breakfast. So the monk went out to ring the bell, and he was like, he must have just been distracted or something, just wasn't paying attention. He rung the bell eight times, you know, which causes a lot of confusion. The bell's never, you know, it's not supposed to be rung eight times. What's going on? So the monk thinks, "Well, I better, you know, I have to fix this." So then he goes back to the bell, and he rings it seven times, which is the correct number. And then he realized, you know, I just rang it eight times, and now I've rung it seven times. Now I've rung the bell 15 times. You know, it's sort of compounded. And the point of the story that he put it was, the way the monk put it was, you can't unring the bell. You know, sometimes once something is done, it's done. And that doesn't mean that you don't take responsibility for your actions. It doesn't mean that you don't try and make things right where you can. It does mean that you don't... You don't stay anchored. You don't stay attached to the various nastinesses that I'll speak for myself. The various nastinesses that I may have perpetrated on others in the past. I feel the gravity of what I did. I feel confident I've done my best to alleviate the suffering that I feel I've done enough of that I can move on. And you know, others, people might argue with me. They might say, "No, you need there's more that you need to do." But that's a decision, and that's something that comes in a 12-step. There's a sort of a lot of overlap between Buddhism and 12-step. But there's the requirement of, and of course I shouldn't have brought this up because I should be able to tell you which step this is exactly, and I can't. If I know I could look it up and I could find out exactly which step this is. But one of the steps is about I think it's the fourth step is making the list and checking it twice, and then a later step, it's either eight or nine, is actually going through the list and making amends to the people that you wronged. But you're not required to harm yourself, put yourself in any danger in order to make amends, nor should you cause more pain or more harm to someone in an attempt to make amends to them. You know, if it would be better that you never talk to this person again, you know, if by all means you do it that way, and use the usual solution is that you write a letter to the person and you don't send it. You give it to your sponsor, and then your sponsor goes over with you and you make whatever changes that might be recommended. And once everybody agrees, then you know the amends is made. And again, there's certain people from the vindictive school of spirituality was saying, and say, you know, that's not good enough. You know, you have to feel more pain. You have to go through more biting. What is it I want to say? You have to be punished. The punishment is a vital element of spirituality for many people, and I just don't, I know I'm an interested party here, but I don't feel that that's particularly useful. And if you disagree with me, please feel free to do so. You can write to me at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. I'd be delighted to hear from you. I'm trying to keep my arguments on my own turf. And that's not because I hope to gain any sort of advantage. It's because whenever I've tried to argue on somebody else's turf, I always end up creating a lot of havoc that I don't. It wasn't my intention. It's never my intention to create havoc. I just want to stimulate thinking. I want to inspire someone to think, to consider an idea that they might not have considered before. And if you listened to the show last week, I had made a post on a Facebook friend, someone I had never met in real life, but someone I had, conversed on each other's posts before. And without getting into what the whole issue was, I disagreed with her stance, and I posted on her thread where she was talking about it that I disagreed, and what do I want to say? Hijinks ensued. I don't know about hijinks, but it was, I had to be either stupid or evil because I didn't agree with her. And she went out of her way. She and other people in the thread went out of their way to mischaracterize my position, to put words in my mouth, the things I didn't. Well, you must think this. I didn't say that. And what I said didn't have anything to do with what you just said. You're just jumping to that conclusion. But anyway, so I've renewed. I had made this I won't say vow. I don't make vows. I'd set this intention before. Let's say it that way. I'd set that intention that I'm not going to say potentially incendiary things. Let's say very stimulating things on someone else's turf. Because that's their turf, and it's just sort of challenging when someone comes in and says, "Ha ha," on their thread that they have started. So now, when I see things that I feel need challenging, I don't refer. My intention is to not refer to a person, any person in specifically. I just take my thought. And I post it separately to Facebook, or I write a blog about it, or I talk about it on the show, or I just I talk about it in the shower, and nobody else has to hear it. So that's I'm not against people speaking their mind. But I am against evangelism. I have a big problem with evangelism. And I know specifically evangelism refers to a certain form of spirituality, really Christian spirituality, which is very in your face. Get in here, you're going to go to hell if you don't feel the way. It's about enlisting people. It's about getting more people on the rolls. It's about saving people's souls, getting more and more people until finally everybody's in the church and nobody else believes any other way. You can apply that same, I don't know if evangelism is the proper word to use when you go outside of spirituality, but it's the same process. Anti-smoking evangelism, vegan evangelism, fitness evangelism, of course, Democrat evangelism, Republican evangelism, one might even say something more trivial like Star Wars 4, 5, and 6 evangelism versus Star Wars 1, 2, and 3 evangelism. Anything where someone is saying, we're right, and you're not, and you need to feel the way that we do, and we're going to keep bludgeoning you with our, maybe not physically, though sometimes that happens, but we're just going to keep attacking you and attacking you and attacking you until you submit to us. And I find that very anti-human. And I'm about humanity, and I'm about people finding their way to spirit in their own way, because everyone has their own path. And anyone who would interfere with that, would take somebody off their path, would ridicule someone for the path that they're on, is shit. I don't like that. I've had many arguments with before. I gave up on it. One of my favorites was with the people who sell the diet supplements. Oh my, that's a hideous and terrifying. And it gets you all into the whole multi-level marketing thing. And I have friends who are multi-level marketers and are relatively benign. They sort of practice their dementia quietly at home, as opposed to others who get out there and say, here's our guy who just earned his car, you know, for all the powder he sold. And our powder is better than their powder. And if you don't eat our powder, you're going to die. And I remember once in particular there was a graphic shown. It was a picture of it was a Statue of Liberty, and one version of it was a skinny with a wearing a bikini, and the other version of it was fat. And it was actually, I think it was something about the caption that disturbed me. And I can't remember what the caption was. But it was, you know, all fat people are stupid, basically, is how it worked out. And I called her on it, that this person who had run it. And her reply was more or less, well, you know, fat people are pretty much stupid. So and then this is a person who will just go nuts over someone from Texas questions gay rights or questions women's rights, but has no qualms at all about saying all fat people are stupid. So if you're going to be that way, if you're going to claim some semblance of an enlightened sensibility, I think you have to be that way in everything. And I think you have to be open to criticism when maybe, just maybe, and I'm just saying, I'm not accusing, I'm just suggesting that maybe there's something that needs to be thought about there. But, you know, I do that and everybody gets really, really upset with me. And so I go see my analyst. She's not an analyst, what is she? She's a social worker. She's like everything. I have all of my health care my mental health care is all rolled up in one package now. There's one person who does all of the various jobs, like four or five different people did. Maybe they just got tired of dealing with me. I don't know. Incidentally, I went down this afternoon. They had a big annual picnic down at the mental health center, which is where I go because I have a need for counseling because I'm diagnosed bipolar. And I take medication for it, and mostly I'm okay. But I do benefit from counseling services, from therapy services, and I can't afford them because I don't have a job, although I do have insurance now through Medicaid, so that might be one thing I can investigate, although Medicaid is paying for what I'm – well, anyway, I got on there. They have and it's county paid. It's paid for by the county. It's mental health services for people who can't pay for it. So as you might expect, many, many of the people are very low functioning. I happen to be very high functioning, I'd like to think. My counselor agrees with me. Most of the people who go there are very low functioning, and I was curious to see, you know, when I went there today, is there anyone else there sort of like me? And I've wanted to ask that of my therapist a few times. I just didn't think, it might be inappropriate to ask or if she would even tell me. You know, wonder, you know, is there someone there, you know, someone who's just, you know, I run from, you know, confrontations with the world because it overwhelms the nonsense that comes in at me from the world just overwhelms me. You know, I don't have that filter that other people seem to have. They just cut off that nonsense and only deal with the, you know, with the stuff that's in front of them. I can't do that, and it gets me in a bad spot emotionally. Not going through what my craziness is like. I was hoping maybe at this picnic, it's like in the parking lot next to the building. They had a grill out there, and they made some hot dogs and potato salad and baked beans. The usual kind of picnic fare and some potato chips, and I missed the ice cream. They were going to have an ice cream truck there, and it was like free ice cream. But they didn't get there, and I could see that storm clouds were gathering. So I sort of made a deep fade for the bus station and got there, got away, made my escape just as the drops began to fall. So I missed out on the ice cream. But you know what I really missed out on was I did not meet anyone who is someone that I would feel like I could talk to, you know, that everyone else was. I want to be careful how I say this because I don't consider anyone to be lower than me. I don't consider anyone to be less than me. They don't, no one there functions as well as I do. They have lots of difficulties that I don't have. And they spend so much of their energy dealing with their own difficulties, I don't think they would. I don't think they'd have much to contribute concerning mine. Is that fair to say? Some very nice people, some people who were kind of nasty, but you know, no one that I could sit in group with. You know, I was in group for a while at Ohio State, and that was kind of fun. It was a group of other PhD students who were pretty much all as messed up as I was. And I ran out of time. Once I had to leave the PhD program, I couldn't be in that group anymore, which was a good thing because I was in all-out seduction mode into one of the other people in the group. Which in group, if you're familiar with that, is very bad. You know, no fraternization of that type is permitted. And I mean, one of two things: if it went on for more than another week or so, I think it actually may have been that week because you know I. Well, anyway, without going into exactly what I did, if it wouldn't have been that week, I think next week or the week after, things would have come to a head. She either would have gone with me, or she would have complained about me to the facilitator, and my secret would be out. And I missed that. I do miss that. I was in that for about a year. And I miss that interaction. And again, I want to be careful how I say this because I don't consider anyone to be below me. I don't consider myself to be above anyone. But I am, that said, take the butt out. That said, I'm kind of smart. I'm kind of on the intelligent side, which is just something that I have. It doesn't mean I'm better than anybody else. It's just a gift that I was given. And it was invigorating to sit in a room with about a half a dozen people who were as intelligent as I was and were also suffering from very similar problems as I was. So you can actually talk, and then you look back and you think, yes, I know what you're talking about. Now, I think that everybody had their own sort of unique way, and now I may be starting to get into dangerous ground here because, of course, confidentiality and all of that. My way of dealing with the pressures, which was extreme alcoholism, other extreme dangerous behaviors, including sexual behaviors. That was pretty unique. The other people in that group didn't really experience their difficulties in that way, or try to sort of squelch them. That was I was trying to make my brain shut up and leave me alone, and I'd find something that would work, and it would work maybe once or twice, and then it wouldn't work anymore, so I'd have to ratchet up the danger. It is truly remarkable that I lived through that. There are a number of close calls. It's remarkable that I never contracted a disease. It's remarkable that I almost put my car off of a cliff, driving it very very fast and very drunk. Probably many things that I don't even remember. That endangered me. And how, I don't really understand how that stopped, unless it was that spirit intervened in my life in some way, just stepped in and said, here's another path for you. You can go to Columbus, Ohio, and you can be in a PhD program, and you can work while you're not studying, and here's a house, a guy who will let you stay with him, a guy that you barely know, you met once, and here's a spiritual group that you can get involved in, that, you know, a spirituality that you will, that I think you'll resonate with. I didn't get any sort of verbal message like that, but I'm saying it's just things fell into place when they didn't have to. There was plenty of good reason for the university not to let me into their PhD program with my history. And they let me in anyway. They gave me a job anyway. I couldn't have gotten a job anywhere else. Who was going to hire me? I've already had that experience, you know, during my present job search of my history getting in the way. So again, it's one thing about having to, I can't, perhaps in some ways I can't outdistance that history, but I have to do what I can. I don't carry it with me where it's there for everybody to see. So maybe all of this, I mean, this is a matter of me talking and saying, you know, what happened to me. But it's not right for me to dwell on it. Now that I have spoken about it, I need to shut the hell up about it and move forward and start looking for the next thing, because that thing that saved me has run its course. I've been holding on to it because I want it. So I liked it so much, and I want it back so badly, but it's not going to come back. It's time for the next thing. So here on this radio program with about 60 seconds left, I set an intention to let go of the past and to pursue the next thing with all the vigor I have left in me. And with that, I'm going to thank you for listening, invite you to listen next Friday at midnight, and I'm going to say good night. Good night.